This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Well, hello, hello. Thank you once again for joining me. I am J. Lewis Mills, and you are now on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Doesn't seem like it's been a week since we've all been together, but I thank you all for joining me again this week. Before I start the show this week, I just wanted to make mention. So last week, I did my show, if you all were present with me, I did my show about family and why we always have to take a back seat. I received a good amount of emails thanking me for doing that type of show as well as for my perspective. So I thank my listeners for letting me know that I am helping you in some way, shape, or form, because that's really all this thing is about, is just helping and inspiring. So thank you very much for that. Now, this week, I am so fortunate to have two guests. They are twin brothers. They are actors, writers. We'll get into what they do. Their names are Antoine and Spencer Holmes. I came to meet these gentlemen, or came to know about these gentlemen, off of the television show that I was blessed to just guest star on, called The Family Business. They have roles on there, so we'll get into talking about that, get into talking about their careers, as well as the book Mr. Holmes wrote. But let me bring them in first. Antoine and Spencer, thank you very kindly, gentlemen, for being here this evening. How are you?
We are doing great.
Great, thanks. Great.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We're very humbled and appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I can tell a little difference in the voice, so you just have to tell me once who is who, and that way I'll be able to decipher.
Okay, this is Antoine Holmes.
Okay.
And this is Spencer Holmes.
Okay, all right. So let's just start off, as I told you guys, this is just a conversation, and I just like to jump right into it. Let's start from the beginning of your acting careers. How did that come about? Was this a joint decision that you both made, being as how you're twins? And if it wasn't a joint decision, whose idea was it to try and go down this path?
Well, I mean, this is Spencer talking right now. Honestly, everything my brother and I do is always like a joint thing. We kind of have a desire and interest in the same things, which that is a blessing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we are actually the developers and, designers, like art directors and graphics. And that's what we did our degree in at Virginia Commonwealth University, which is VCU, years ago. And we started at the time
in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, we're from Richmond, Virginia.
Where are we from?
Okay.
So we did come to California to pursue the really the screenwriting business, because my brother and I are both, like I said, we're both writers.
Yes.
As being the artists and developers and drawers that we are, but we wanted to pursue that industry. So that's the reason why we did come to California years back.
We kind of fell into the acting.
Well, the main reason why is because my brother and I developed a design company, which was called Ash Brothers. At the time, Ash Productions, it's merged into Ash Brothers. Okay. But the industry just got slow for us. And back in 2007, 2008. Yeah. It just, the clients, we wasn't getting the clients like we used to. It just, the industry wasn't flowing. And honestly, it just kind of fell from underneath us. So for that, we definitely went back, started working for other companies and corporations. But even in that, we just noticed it just wasn't the same in getting work. So the plan B was, man, we got to do something, you know. Yes. And we already knew that we came here to write, but the writing wasn't just being noticed. So we said, you know what? And, you know, listening to other friends that was telling us, why don't we just get into acting? You know,
yeah, but to add to that, the acting, like, is when I said kind of fell into our direction. You know, we were a little overweight back in the day. We enjoyed a lot of that soul food from the South.
I get it, yeah.
had too many plates of that, so we over the years, you know, we gained a little weight and so forth. And my oldest son, actually, he just kind of like challenged me, and that challenge kind of motivated me to watch what I eat. So we end up losing about 35-40 pounds, and in doing that, we kind of just you know, kind of submitted for some hydroxycut commercial and end up getting picked for it to kind of go through that journey of losing weight. And my brother and I actually, like I said, we really did. We lost 35-40 pounds during that challenge. And after we did it, people was like, wow, you guys did such a great job. You should look to getting into acting.
Right.
And that's what kind of opened the door. And we did our first role with Eric Ramsey.
Eric Ramsey. Yeah.
Eric Ramsey is a producer director, and we did an independent film called Cannibal.
Yes, Cannibal.
Cannibal.
Modern day.
And it's on what? Amazon.
It's on Amazon Prime. You can look at it, and also you can reach out to Eric Ramsey, which is Team Ramsey Entertainment.
Okay.
And look into that. But definitely, it was a great independent film we did with that. We enjoyed it because it was two versions of the Cain Abel. They showed him at young Cain Abel, like little kids, and then went teenagers. To teenagers. My brother and I, you know, we at the time we shaved our beards off.
We had to go all, you know, no facial hair to make us look like we high school kids.
Yeah, so we play 18, 19-year-old seniors going into college age, and then these other twins, Calvin and Melvin.
Calvin and Kelvin stepped in and played the older twins. So it was a great production. It was a great opportunity.
Yes.
That really opened the door for us. And then from there, we just kept doing a lot of
commercials
and independent stuff. But I really want to talk about the background, because a lot of actors and actresses do a lot of background.
Yeah.
We do a lot of background to get our foot into the industry.
Yeah.
And it's humbling. I actually love it, because it's a great humbling experience, because it doesn't matter what actors or big names you have on TV shows or on the screen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There, it'll be an empty set without background.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 How much background work did you all start out with? I mean, I did some when I was living in Phoenix, Arizona. That's where I first started doing background work. So how much did you all do? And while you were beginning this journey, did you join an acting studio in Los Angeles?
Yeah, we joined Central Casting.
Yeah.
And we was with them for about 2 years.
Yeah, Central.
And from there, we did a lot of small stuff on Amazon. What is it called? What's it called?
Are you talking about
I Love Dick on Amazon?
Yeah, I Love Dick on Amazon. We got the background. and it's funny because that. A lot of time, my brother and I do background. We're fortunate. When the blessing is, we get fortunate to kind of get bumped in our character to more. And that's people that got to realize too. It's the unique part of it. You will get bumped to the background to a more of a feature background. Yeah. So that helped us out with, you know, knowing the producers and more. And like I said, that just allowed us to have the passion. We desire the passion and to want to get in more to of a leading role. Mm-hmm. We also did, you know, we did
Transformers. Bumblebee Transformers.
Yeah, and we're fortunate to get on that.
And then we also did just recently on the CBS app, we did the Star Trek.
Yeah, we got fortunate to get on Picard.
Star Trek Picard. So we were with some people that haven't seen it. A certain part of that series deals with twins.
Yeah, a whole bunch of twins. So we was fortunate.
Okay.
Yeah, they kind of get grouped in with the background on that. It was fun. Like I said, we still did that, and we did also did, like I said, we got on the, what's the name?
What? You talking about that game show?
No, I forget the name.
Don't bring that up.
Don't bring up the game show, man. That's too early. We were just scratching.
Okay, yeah. Okay, man. We all did it. I got a couple of those that, as a matter of fact, I sent a production, and I mean, I hope they didn't feel bad, but I sent a production an email and was like, look, can y'all take my IMDb credit off of your thing? Because, I mean, I'm not really, you know, this was so far back in the day, and it was one of those projects that, you know, like I said, we all have them, those ones that you have to do in the beginning in order to get that set experience. You know, one of the things that, you know, I hear people say is, oh yeah, I'm going to go to LA and, you know, I'm going to meet as many casting directors as I can, and I'm going to go to all the parties, and I'm going to this. And I'm like, well, first of all, if you show up at all the parties and you shut down all the parties, everybody's going to know that you're not working.
Yeah,
because you're shutting down the party. So you really kind of don't want to do that. And, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, you can say you're going to go and you're going to meet all these casting directors, and it's just going to, you're just going to be walking down Hollywood Boulevard and someone's going to pick you. It doesn't usually happen that way. You know, so when I hear people say things like that, I'm like, you know, it really doesn't matter who you know. It matters who knows you.
Yep, absolutely.
So if you can get in there and you can make people remember you, when you were talking about getting bumped up to, you know, being a feature, I mean, just imagine being a bald black guy with mutton chops on his face and an eye patch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been times when I've walked on set and I wasn't supposed to be in the role that I got, but because of that unique look that, you know, one of the things I bring to the table is that look. So, excuse me, I absolutely understand that. But I was getting to saying, when I hear people that, you know, talk about how they're going to just first come to L.A. and I need to get my SAG card. Once I get my SAG card, everything is going to be okay. Well, no, not really.
Not really.
Because if you don't have that experience, you show up to a SAG audition and you don't know what to do, people are going to remember that. You show up on a SAG set and you are less than professional, people are going to remember that. So I always like to hear when people actually say, you know, I had those jobs that, you know, I had to start somewhere, and it just motivated me, as you said, it just motivated me to want to do better. So I absolutely appreciate you all for saying that.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't want to forget that we did do a BT show, a film called Fanatic, which was a great opportunity for my brother. Same way we came in background and got bumped to the feature background, and we actually to the main character. That
was a bodyguard to the main character on there, and I think that kind of stick with us, the whole
bodyguard
tough guy.
and just clear
to your listeners, we're really sweet guys. I'm not going, you know, we don't walk around beating people up, but we just keep getting casted to play bodyguards or somebody that's going to knock you down, stuff like that. It pays a check, so, you know,
absolutely.
But hey, we'll take it.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about briefly. Let's fast forward to this, but I want to go back a little later in our conversation. But let's fast forward to the current project that you know, actually all three of us can be seen on, The Family Business. How did that come about for you both?
Actually, very the same way. This is Spencer. We definitely got to, you know, use the channel and websites as far as Actor Access, LA Casting. So I was on Actor Access, just doing as again as actors. You still don't wait around with whether you have managers or agents. You still get on. You do your due diligence as far as looking for work. So I was looking for work, and I saw the posting actually for family business. This was actually at the time it was promoting as a movie.
Right.
And I saw who the producers and the actors that was involved. And I actually, I saw it and I kept on going, you know, and I said the spirit within me said, you know, go back. And I was kind of like, all right, you know, I always listen to myself and then the voice. Yes. So I just went back and I saw what it was asking for, which they was asking only for a bodyguard.
Yeah, one bodyguard.
One bodyguard.
Background.
Okay. Only background for Ernie Hudson character. So I submitted myself, and in the submission, like I said, Twan and I, we do not do any work by ourselves. That's our goal. That's our niche. We want to present to the industry as a team. We are a unit. We're one. So I submitted for it, but including my brother, and said, wouldn't it be even a better look if you had two twin bodyguards? Immediately, like within an hour, I got a response back to say yes, and your twin brother to set, which really was the next day. So we got to set, and like I said, it was a beautiful experience. At the time, it was
KJ Rose
was what she did the background for. She did the casting for background.
Okay.
On the set of The Family Business through TriDestined Films. And like I said, we're definitely doing your work ethic and professionalism. Mm-hmm. My brother and I brought what we needed to do, and they loved it, which one of the main scenes was, if you saw first season, when the Duncans, which is the father and the sons, came walking down the showroom in the cars. That was really a highlight scene for Antoine and Spencer bringing into our role, Carlos and Carl, which at the time, you know, for Carl Weber's, it wasn't a
real. There is no Carlos and Carl.
It was just in the books. Yeah, it was just background. So the blessing was they liked our energy, they liked what we brought, and they blessed us. Trey Haley, Indy Brown,
yes.
Carl Weber's. They believed in us enough to say, "I like these guys. I want to keep them around."
And wrote us into the series.
And they wrote us into the series.
Yeah, that's the way it was. When I got season two, I was supposed to be on for one day.
Wow.
And that one day turned into four episodes. And as much as I love the work that they have already put out for season two, I can't wait
people
to see the work that's coming up.
And that's Brother Samuel.
Yes.
So that's how you see. That's what I said. That's the love of TriDestined.
And it's a family.
Yeah, family. Like I said, they'll see your work ethic, and they also will see your energy and be like, whoa, I can turn this individual into a character that will also be a character that my fan base and the viewers will just start loving to see. And honestly, like I said, your character, Brother Samuel, working with Brother X is a great unit.
Yeah,
it's a great team.
It's like you said,
I can't wait for everybody to see
what will come from that.
Yes.
And for me as an actor, and tell me if you agree with this or agree somewhat with it, but you know, it's not every day that we get a blessing like, you know, going on to a set, I'll say it like this. It's not every actor is not able to experience the blessing of going on to a set and being upgraded or having someone in production come and talk to you and say, you know, you have a killer look. We want to expand on this. Or there was a film that I did where I didn't get the role because they said that I looked too young, but they liked what I did in the audition. And the director said, if you would accept another role, I want to write a role for you.
Wow.
So, you know, when those things happen, or when you're supposed to be on set for one day and you end up at the end of the end of the end of the day, you end up working on four episodes. When things like that happen, I have to believe that the most grounded of us see that as just something very humbling instead of something like, oh yeah, I'm so good, I'm so great, look at what they did.
Wow.
Obviously, that's the wrong way. That's the wrong way to see it. But when I kept getting I kept getting emails. Are you available this day? Are you available this day? We have new scenes. We have this. We have this. Of course, I'm going to absolutely be available. But just that level of attention, mm-hmm. you know, that I was blessed with, mm-hmm. it helped me to be grounded. It helped me to stay humble. As well, it was also, you know, validating. So when that happens to you, how far off of what I said are you when you actually do go on set and you're just there for just some regular thing, and because of your look, you end up getting upgraded?
Well, we totally agree with everything you said, and I want to stay with that. I want to backtrack a little bit to say, all right, that happened to my brother and I a lot. Like, we did we booked a Burger King commercial. It was supposed to be national. Mm-hmm. So we was part of the main characters. We weren't even background. We got hired as full cast, and we went and did our job. You know, of course, when you get hired as the part of the full cast, the pay as well. We knew we signed the contract, I guess, national. We are excited, going, yes, yes. You know, like the opportunity. Thank you, thank you. But then people got to learn. They didn't air it. They didn't air our part. They aired some other twins, which, mm-hmm. you know, blessings to them for getting as well. But like, yes. you said, it was never like, oh, I'm angry. It was kind of like, hey, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You know, thank you for allowing other people. At least we got picked. Casting director saw us. And like I said, because it's a community where other casting directors still are involved, producers and everybody, directors.
Everybody
talks to everybody. So we love the opportunity. Of course, national-wise, to have our spot aired would have been even better. But we look at everything as an opportunity. And sometimes my brother and I would go meet in front of the casting director, and they'll put us on available. Which, for, you know, to be on avail means it's another great thing. Hey, mm-hmm. you that next level is being cast. But then sometimes you get dropped. And of course, we like, oh my goodness. Because, you know, of course, as my brother now, we think about providing, taking care of our family. Yes. But we also look at the blessing in that, because at least you got the okay, and the casting director and the producer and the directors like you. They just went in another direction.
Right.
Yes. So at least you got avail. So, like you said, we take something that may seem could be negative for other people or a downer, but we don't do that. You know, that's even how we're raised. We're taught like to look at the brighter side of things. And we did apply that now to family business.
It's such a humbling experience. I know for myself, I can speak for my brother. I mean, every day we get a script, or we get, like you said, the emails that come to work. I'm grateful and I'm thankful, and I'm saying thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I don't have to get that.
Yeah, family business. Yeah, yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
So it's very humbling.
Yeah. And then also, like I said, like how you got Brother Sammy, they blessed us by last season with Turnaround, gave us the character names Carlos and Carl, which that was a blessing as well. And in the end, to say we're keeping y'all involved, and now we're actually going to be written into his new books and everything.
Yeah, because what I liked about what Carl Weber did with because Family Business is such a big fan base. Mm. People are familiar with all the different characters. So for him to add these two twins who are now bodyguards, I also gave our characters an opportunity to come into their own identity. Because we start off in season one, you see us, we don't speak much. We do what we're told. We're pretty much, we work right underneath Junior Duncan.
Junior, yes.
Sean Ringo's character.
Played by Sean Ringo. And because Vegas is in jail, and we pretty much work hand on hand with him. But then I don't want to do any spoilers for people who haven't seen season one, so go see it. Something happened within season one. So Father Duncan gave us an opportunity to kind of venture on our own. Mm-hmm. But now we're getting a little bit tougher, but we're bringing all that attention back to the family. So now in season two, with the direction of Mr. Duncan, Orlando gives us a little bit of financial freedom. And so now we have our own crew all working with the Duncan family. So as you see us, as we have more dialogue, Carlos and Carl's character are very reserved around the Duncan family.
Yeah, we're with Orlando Duncan's, which is Darren Henson's character. We're around him all the time.
Yeah, but our character's a little reserved. We kind of hold ourselves back. But as the episode go on and on and on, and like you said before, when they go see the rest, they're going to really see Carlos and Carl put that reserve away, and now we're going to be a little more violent, be a little more aggressive. Yeah. So,
How is it for you, you know, as you just said, you know, when you first started out, you didn't have much dialogue, and now the responsibility of you as an actor is there because you're getting more responsibility there on set. So how, with the evolution of your characters, as actors, individual as well as together, because all of your scenes are, I'm sure all of your scenes are going to be together. So how are you taking that, taking this new level of a responsibility? And, or I guess a better question would be, do you see it as more of a responsibility? Because as you said, the family business has a very deep fan base. I mean, the family business fan base started with the books, and they, the fan base from the book, wanted to see a film or and a television show. So how is that new responsibility for you, or how are you taking it, dealing with it, because the fan base is so large?
Oh, it's definitely, I would be very honest, it's definitely a task. But like with any challenge, you know, you work through it. We study all the time, which is
homework.
Homework, reading the script, understanding the characters. My brother and I, we come up to set a lot on our days off, and we just watch. For us, it's like school. We're like sponges. We sit there, and the cast is so dynamic. Mm-hmm. We have so many amazing actors and actresses on set, so we just literally go there and we just watch.
We watch
mannerisms. Yeah. How are they saying this? We speak to everybody and say, how can I do this better, or how can I define this better? So we're like students.
We like to learn
and love learning. So we just, like I said, we're constantly studying. We also too watch tons of, not tons, like for leisure, but we our studying study comes movies. In watching other TV shows and movies to see how they react to certain things. Because you have, you know, even though you're speaking the words, it has to be believable for the person on the other side to go, okay, these guys are believable. So it's a...
And we want the fans. We want the fans to love the new characters of Carlos and Carl. You know, my brother and I, with that, we're in the gym. We're working out to keep, you know, a look a certain way and physique so that we can be, you know, the sex symbol as well. Why not? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. My first big job was the show that I did on NBC Heartbeat, the one I was a series regular on. And it hit me a certain way when you said that even on your days off, you will go to set, because so we shot the pilot in Vancouver, and every day that I did not work, I was on set. I was watching my castmates, and I remember somebody asking me, why do you do this? And I said, well, if I have a scene with one of my castmates, I want to see how they are. It's one thing to sit and watch the show with them, you know, but and it's a whole different, for me at least, it's a whole different thing to be there live and see someone's process. For again, for me at least, it's I need to see what you're doing between action and cut, as well as what you're doing between cut and action.
Right.
Yep. So I would go to set every day, and to be honest with you, you two are the first gentlemen or the first people that I have ever heard say that is something that you do, as and also, you know, in your studying. You know, I get told I watch too much television. I have to tell people, I'm not sitting here watching this because it's an entertaining show or because it's an entertaining film. I'm watching this character. I'm watching this actor. I'm watching how they're delivering these lines. I'm watching how they are in these particular situations. So You know, if I have an audition to get ready for, it's the same thing. I will go and find a TV show. I will go and find a movie that's in that ballpark so that I can understand how to get into that mindset. And I also still use an acting coach. Do you all find yourselves when you have the script, do you have an acting coach that you go to help you work out scenes, whether it's family business or another project you're working on?
Yeah, we have actually two good friends that are actors.
Okay.
Been in the acting game for a very long time. And sometimes if we're not going over scenes, we're going over certain things that happen within the scene or even coming up to say, okay, how can we go about doing this? And they give us very good direction. So I'm very fortunate to have these two guys in our lives because I could just jump on the phone and say, hey, you know, this is what this is what's going on. What's the best way to go about doing it? So
even being on set, you know, I definitely got to show love to Trey Haley. Always, you know, talking about, you know, as a director, give us, you know, love. And even Carl Weber tell us, you know, hey, I like this, but do it this way. And, you know, they help us through it. Darren Henson, Sean Ringold, even Dennis White, they talk us through it and be like, yo, slow down, just breathe. And I appreciate that. You know,
because it's nerves. I'm going to be honest.
The nerves get in, kick in.
And it's not nerves. It's not nerves of being scared. I call it the anxiety of being around famous people.
Yes, I get it. Yeah. You know, the man, people that you're around, it's like, you know, I'm here on set with X, Y, and Z.
Right.
This is where I am. You know, I could be, and I mean, God bless telemarketers, but I could be in a telemarketing room somewhere and I'm getting ready to run lines with whoever it is. So, yeah, I absolutely understand that nervous as the motivation. It is definitely there. I have an interesting question, and I don't know if this is, and if this is out of context or if it's still in context. But if you know anything about boxing, you know who the Klitschko brothers are. Although I don't think they're twins, but they are brothers, and they always said that they would never box against each other.
Right.
Makes sense. Yeah. So would you and your brother, either Antoine or Spencer, either one that wants to answer this question, would you all ever compete for the same role? Like if it was just a one person role and they only needed one, would you all compete or would you have a little sidebar and be like, okay, you know what, you got the last one, so I'll take this one? Or how does that whole thing work?
So yes and no. And the way I left it two parts is depending on the role and depending on the type of role, or, you know, whether it be independent or something major, because an opportunity is opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because something my brother can get, he got his foot in the door. Mm-hmm. So he is being seen. And being that we're twins, who knows what can come down the line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't never want to throw something away because my brother can't get a part of it. Now, not knocking any type of production. Like I said, we've done a lot of small things to get to where we're at. But if, you know what I'm saying, but if it was something that I know that, you know what, we can go ahead and pass on because it'll be better if my brother and I both can do it, then I'll just pass on it.
Yeah, because it's our brand. It is our brand to do it together. Yeah.
We want people to understand that we're trying to do something different. Because I know there's a lot of actors and actresses that are twins in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't really work with their siblings. So I want to, my brother and I want to show the world that we want to be this, you know, this actor, whether it's an action role or very, you know, highly dramatized, a dramatic role, you can do it with two.
You can do it with two. You can make it work. Yeah.
Especially would you all ever consider doing, okay, now this might be a little far-fetched, but could you ever see a change happening to where you both play the same role.
Yep. And we,
so
glad you said
it's,
that.
It's funny you say that. So that kind of goes into the second part of our My Brother Now's career. Like I said, we started off as screenwriters. So we one of our scripts is a piece. I'm not going to kind of say the title, but it's a piece where, yes, we are that.
We are
and
that.
We wrote it literally for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it is something that I don't want to go too much into it because it's something we're currently pitching out. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it gets picked up, well, not if, when it get picked up, the mm-hmm. world gets to see a dynamic of twins playing each other.
And we will do that. And I like the concept behind that because we want to constantly, that's a good idea, opportunity to confuse your audience.
Yeah.
You think, hold on, isn't that guy, that's that one twin. But then you see him again, you know, he looks different, but it's the same guy. And that's perfect to confuse all. That's why I say a writer, director can utilize the fact that we look alike, but be one person, but use the same person.
Because even though we're different, we have a lot of similarities. But how we want to go about doing it, how we've written it, is when one twin is playing that particular character, we will switch.
Yep.
And we'll also play that exact same character, and he will do the same for me. So that way, no one really knows who is who.
Mm-hmm.
They can't. Okay. That person is that. Oh, no, he's, what's going on? Something. I'm confused. So, we're looking forward to it. Like I said, we hopefully it gets picked up and people can see that.
But even like right now in the industry, saying like right now you have just one role with a major film, like Twan said, whether he gets picked up or I get picked up, the blessing is everybody needs a double. You still need a stand-in. You still need a stunt double. Well, not like a stunt guy, but
for each other.
Our stand-ins get paid well, and they get treated just like the main character. So that's why a lot of these little things my brother and I learned, like, wow, I didn't know that in the industry. The stand-in get paid pretty well. So, like I said, we don't look at us. We never compete. Even right now with writing, my brother and I, we write together. And then Twan sometimes would take on the writing and go further in. Then I would pick up the pen and go in. But we write together. And then, like right now, even like when we go to the book, it's our script. Twan took the book, took the script that we both wrote and embellished it. Because, you know, the book got to be different from the script.
Yes.
And he took it and embellished it more. So it definitely is an AR or Antoine Holmes project, which in book two, it'll be Antoine Spencer Holmes project. But we never compete for it.
Yeah.
I thank the blessings of my parents that kept us from competing. We don't look at it like that. We just look at it as, man, it's a blessing. It's an opportunity for us. You know, so we don't look at things like that.
Well, this is a pretty good segue because I wanted to talk about this book, and it's called Pharaoh: Power Behind the Sun Series, Book One.
Yes.
Just in your own words, tell my listeners what this is about.
So Pharaoh, in very short words, it is a love story. Mm-hmm. It is a love story of a man and his woman. It's a love story of a man and his family. And it's a love story of a man and his creator.
Mm-hmm.
So within this love story, there are many feuds and many confrontations. So that's pretty much just like in a real quick, without really going into too much detail, I want people to understand that, you know, there's not going to be no Hallmark typey, mushy type of book. No, it's people have to understand there is love in everything. Mm. Everything doesn't have to be the love that we think. It's a more of an unconditional love. And from the unconditional love, you can get into intimacy and all of that. But you can have an intimate love for your creator.
Mm.
You can have an intimate love for your family.
Mm.
And you can have an intimate, dynamic love for the woman that you care for and love. So they're going to see that in Pharaoh, and they're going to see it through many different characters in Pharaoh, not just the main character.
Which is all take place in the land of Kemet.
Mm-hmm. And it's a true story.
It's a true story, you know, off in the land of Kemet, known as Egypt.
Yeah.
But these are the points we want to really just give them, and you definitely see the name Power Behind the Sun, because it explains more of the power behind the sun.
The divinity of you know, there's so many different names for God, but the creator is the creator.
Okay. And
in our universe, there's nothing more powerful than the sun. So if that's powerful, then what is the power behind the that sun?
Behind the sun. Okay. And now there's, so are these three different stages of love, or are these three different types of love?
So that's a very good question. Man, let me think about it.
Mm. No. Well, like I said, it's all one and the same. Like, people like to box love. So it's a constant growing thing. As you read the book, you'll see, even when you first read the book, just giving a little bit, that it's prayer. It's a, you'll see, definitely you'll see a one character. You want to know who that character is speaking about, what's going on, about to happen. But it start off even right now, because really the book mirrors the screenplay. It's about a prayer. And it's a prayer to Aten, which is Adonai in Hebrew, but Aten, or God, the divine one. It's the prayer of love. It's your prayer of worship. Mm-hmm. And then immediately merge into dealing with a grandmother, a mother, and a son or grandson. So again, that's the transition. Again, the love of the God, the love of your creator, the love of, you see, in family. Then you started then from that family, the same grandmother speaking about the land that you're coming from.
But the whole book is narrated in first person, telling a story. Queen Ti, which is the mother of Akhenaten and the grandmother of King Tut, and she is telling this story to young King Tut about his life, his family, how it came. But people forget that's where love starts. Mm-hmm. Love starts with the mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think we lose that sometimes in this male dominant world that we, you know, trying to get out of and make that union. But mm-hmm. there is no love greater than the mother's love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest reason why we told it from the love from the mother or grandmother. Mm-hmm. And you'll continue to see how she plays an important role in the decision making, because in ancient Kemet, the woman, the Pharaoh's wife, or the queen, man, she was
she's just as powerful,
equal, or even more dominant than Pharaoh.
Because Pharaoh means great house. So, and like I said, all this stems from the 18th dynasty. And anybody knows and read about Egypt, why this dynasty is like, okay, it's, we know about dynasty. Most important dynasty. What happened? What took place that it made it so important? And why these particular pharaohs are made so significant? Than a lot of other dynasties, which, you know, all of them mean well, all of them, you know, are powerful, but this dynasty is very, very specific and unique. Yeah. So, and it has a definitely, my brother and I, like I said, we come from Baptist ministers. So it has the religious overtone. So people also need to know the origins of all religion comes out of Egypt anyway. So, you know, the book will share and show you a lot. And like I said, we might get readers that might get upset and stuff, but my thing is, hey, this allows you to go do research as well.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you have readers that get upset, I've always been the believer in, you know, there's no such thing as bad press. You know, if you are invoking that type of emotion out of somebody, at least it shows that they are well vested in your work, you know, for it to bother them to that point. So even if it does, you know, sometimes we have to, you know, some things have to upset us. That's just our own growth for us to understand. So even if people do get upset, I mean, I'm sure they'll get over it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now So I'm on chapter 2.
Yes.
So I have to pretend like I haven't read any of the book at all. And I'm not saying that I read a lot, because I am just at chapter 2. But in your opinion as the author, is this story an easy story to follow if you don't understand the characters involved? Or do you have to understand the characters involved to fully understand the story?
No, the name is going to be a little tricky for people to understand, but What I wanted to really do in the book is go very detailed within each character, because like I said, everybody's real. Everybody, they can look it up. But I wanted to highly, highly dramatize what I think they would be doing and saying. So I think, you know, and this is based off my family as they continue to, you know, read it, you know, they proofread it, proofread it. They just kept giving their feedback, and that allowed me to kind of get better as I kept writing it. But in defining the characters, in the end, they said it became very easy to kind of go, okay, I don't have to go back to chapter 2 to figure out what this person did in chapter 6. So it's
and also easy. The beauty of it too, if you look at the table of contents, the it's labeled by each character. So you're seeing that this character, if it's Queen T, or you know, Rey Harakhte, you know, you'll be like, well, oh, okay, but this is this person's chapter. So even in confusion, you could go back to the chapter and say, okay, who is this character? You know, and like I said, and it's not saying confusion, but you have closure, but that's what introduces book two.
Yes, book, yeah. And all Pharaoh does, it just gets the readers ready for what's going to happen in book two, and that's going to be a good one. Yeah. We've already
Can I ask how many books there are, or is that letting to that? Is that giving too much information?
No. So it's a series. It's a series of four. First one, of course, Pharaoh. They're all called Power Behind the Sun series. So Pharaoh, which is the first one. Mm-hmm. Second one is The Sun, S-O-N, A God Story. And then three is Queen. And then the fourth one, Tut, Power Behind the Sun.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to write this story? I know that you said that it's a true story and the people that you speak about are real people. What led you to write this story? Or these stories?
It's a good question. We started developing this over 20 years ago.
Where we wrote it? 24?
We was about 24 years old when we first got into it. I had a traumatic experience in my life in my early 20s. Which left me little bit hurt and scarred, and you know, I still deal with and trouble through it even now. Okay. Years forward. So I wanted some type of understanding and learning of truth. I wanted to know the origins of why we do the things we do, say the things we say.
Mostly in religion.
And spirituality and so forth. So, you know, my dad, you know, which is a minister in the past, that kind of gave me some strong words and tell me how to go look for things, to go look for the origin of things. So what better place than Kemet, you know, Egypt,
Africa.
Yeah. So
Africa, yeah, all of it.
It literally led me to it. It's almost like it led me to the 18th dynasty. At that time, I did not know it was the most famous dynasty of all of ancient Egypt. There's many different great stories of all the different dynasties, but the 18th dynasty had a very dynamic story that needed to be told from our point of view.
Yeah.
We have a lot of archaeologists, you know, that want to say a lot of different things about Egypt and their pharaohs, but you know, we have to hear from our point of view because it's our land.
Yeah. I mean, and also just in history, even for biblical history, you know, we're taught a lot of things just came even just through Moses himself. So even just for Moses, that helped gave my brother and I a direction. But for Moses, he brought the concept of one to everything for the world. And outside of the Bible in history, there's only one individual who did that first, and that was
Akhenaten.
Yeah. So my brother and I, we started just learning how to just, because we grew up as Christians, taking the Bible and just comparing it to history and going, wow. Well, and then through Akhenaten, we found out through his bloodline, you know, through his father and his grandfather, they belong to the Mosaic tribe, which if you look at the spelling, it's still spelled as Moses. They just put Ah or A-H, yeah. Ah-Moses. Yeah. It's like, why is Moses attached to this bloodline? And Akhenaten came from this bloodline. And Akhenaten was known as bringing the one concept of God, or the one concept of bringing all the you know, because, you know, the Egyptians, they're not just, you know, worse than many gods. A lot of people take that for granted. Yeah, they and think that they never believed in that. What they did is just they applied.
They understood the different aspects of the creator.
Yeah.
This is even where we get the word nature from, which is Nata. I may be pronouncing it wrong, but Nata, out of Kemet, that word, and this is how we got the word nature. But it's just different aspects of God, different aspects of the creator, and the Egyptians venerated that. They didn't worship as a being God. They worship it as, or venerated as, the different aspects of the creator.
But when foreign, like Ra.
Mm-hmm. When foreign invaders came in, they couldn't understand these concepts. Mm-hmm. So they started to separate it and made each one individual and call it God and goddesses and all of that. And Akhenaten wasn't having that. We got to bring it back to how it was. These people, these northern invaders, they messed it up. We got to bring it back. So it's a big feud. So I just hope people really enjoy the book, because even though I added some fiction in it, I highly dramatize a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. They pick up some books or Google and research for themselves. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a couple of more questions to ask you, but I need to take a quick break, play a couple of commercials, and then when we come back, I keep that thought pattern, because I have two particular questions that I want to ask you. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Hi, this is J. Lewis Mills. I want to tell you guys about this really cool app that I've teamed up with. It's called Payphone X. Basically, what you do is you go to your app store, wherever you get the apps for your smart devices, and you download the Payphone X app. It's for international celebrities, athletes, singers to send you video messages, text messages, phone calls. It's a really quick registration for you, and then you just go right to the search engine and you can find your celebrity. It's called Payphone X. Make sure you download it. Search out J. Lewis Mills. I'm on there as well. Now let's get back to the show. Hi, this is J. Lewis Mills, host of On the Level with J. Lewis Mills. If you are in the Los Angeles area and you need new headshots, I would like to recommend Eric Lee Huffman. He actually did my demo reel. You can reach Eric at headshotsbyhuffman@gmail.com. That's headshotsbyhuffman, H-U-F-F-M-A-N, @gmail.com. Or you can call him at 323-364-4685. 323-364-4685. Tell them J. Lewis sent you. Now let's get back to the show. All right. You are on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I am he, J. Lewis Mills. I am here speaking with Mr. Antoine and Mr. Spencer Holmes. So Antoine, getting back to our conversation, I wanted to ask you, because these are real people, as we have already established, in order to write this book, did you have to do an extensive amount of research? And right before the commercial, you said that you added drama to it. I understand that's, you know, for entertainment reasons, but where was that line that you didn't cross when you added the drama to the story?
Great question, by the way. So in starting the research for this, man, it was
I mean, it's cool. Like I said, it goes back. We've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, it's like literally it took 20 years. So when brother and I was first got introduced to it, to this, you know, we were at the time were studying studying the language of Hebrew. And then we was also teaching ourselves Arabic. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, we started to understand words, meanings.
Etymology of words.
Etymology of words, origins of, you know, how words form and what certain words mean, how it's different in English. So in doing that, when we started to look at this defined history, this origin stories of Kemet, where a lot of our concepts, if not all, mm-hmm. our concepts come from. So in doing that, like I said, we just kept just researching, and it started off as a thesis paper.
Yeah.
My brother and I, you know, it's always funny because we wasn't very great in school. But it's just funny. I wasn't good at math. No,
we're artists.
Yeah, I'm an illustrator. I can draw you look just like you.
Yeah, that's,
and, you know, but that's but cool. I wasn't good at math and I wasn't good at writing, and I end up, you know, loving coding. So I'm a very very good web developer, which is all math. And then I started to love writing because I'm a big history buff, and also mm-hmm. I love learning about different religions and spiritualities. So it began as a thesis paper, and it just started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So literally, as we were writing, it was almost as if God was putting dialogue in my head.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't know what it was. I was just like, you know,
we both was almost, I'm gonna be honest, we was literally having the same dream.
Yeah, it was crazy.
We was coming back to it. I'll come to my brother and be like, yo, I had this dream. He was like, man, you had that same? We had the same dream.
So we just wrote it down. We just started writing
down
what the characters were saying and how they were acting dreams. And what they were doing. Yeah. And then that gave birth to the script 20 years ago. So then maybe about 5 years ago, I was like, you know, I need to dust the script off and maybe put it as a book. Mm-hmm. And man, how am I going to go about doing that? So once again, I went to do more research. I went more research on how novels were written, how to write in certain persons, how to write as a narrative, as a narrator. It was challenging. But like I said, with any challenge, man, it just makes you stronger. And
absolutely.
Makes so that's what really began the journey to kind of not pull too far away from the story. I did add a lot of different science fiction type of concepts.
Mm-hmm. But hold on, but I'm glad Twan said that because we just watching now, and I can say this out loud because you can watch King Tut on the Disney Plus. You know, they rebirth King Tut's tomb. And you know, we can say science fiction, but you gotta look for what it is. Like I said, as we're writing and outlining for book two, I told Twan, I said, hey man, watching this King Tut, they're looking at, you know, what was inside his coffin, and they had out of all the different mini pieces of treasures he had in his coffin, why he had a certain dagger laying directly on top of him. Mm-hmm. And when they researched the dagger, they realized during this time of Egypt, you didn't have lead. They made their
iron.
They made their weapons out of different materials, but it wasn't iron. And it wasn't in that part of Africa mm-hmm. when they got it. So they was like, they realized it was a meteorite. But where'd it come from? Mm-hmm. So again, they're even saying, say there's some uniqueness in science, or how did he get it? How did they form it? You know, how was it on his particular dagger and not on most of Egyptians' weapons? Right. So it's somewhere within this dynasty, a family, these guys are connecting and dealing with and talking, you know, whether it's spiritual or something, they're doing something. So that gave... So we're just learning, Antoine and I are just learning this, but in our reading and research for over the years, we already saw that the spiritualness and the interaction was already there because Egypt is just so advanced anyway. So it did make it easy for us to say, man, and then also, yes, looking at biblical things as well, as you read it, it's like, you know what? We can see them saying this or interacting with this, you know?
So all we did was just gave a physical representation of what a god or gods may look like.
Mm-hmm. Based on headdresses that you see, like what made them wear, you know, Heru, which they call Horus, what made him wear this particular headdress, which mm-hmm. is the, you know, the falcon head and, you know, the eyes, what made them, why they wear that? You know, I'm sure everybody want to know these type of questions. Why are they wearing this big animal headdress on top of a human body. Where did it come from? You know, but then when you look at the Book of Revelations, they're doing the same depictions. You know what I'm saying? So that gave a lot of...
There's room for interpretation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room for interpretation.
So, you know,
That's why I say I label it as fiction, historical fiction. You know, I don't want to upset the people that's saying, how can this... You know, you're distorting this historical piece. Hey, guys, it's fiction. So back up.
But feel it. You know, but like I said, the story going to grow, and the blessings for Antoine and I is that, you know, we get a lot of people interested that they say, oh, it's a script, because we definitely want the script made. That, you know, we want the world to see the vision.
They need to see these powerful they need to see it. Black images on the screen.
Yes.
Do you think that, and we'll wrap this up with this question. Do you think the script, because again, I am only on chapter 2, but if when this does get made into a feature, whether it's a feature series or a feature film, that budget is going to be pretty outrageous. Is that a fair statement? In order to really give justice to the story, do you agree that the budget for the screen part of it would almost have to be outrageous just to tell a proper story?
Yes. Yeah. And I want to compare it to the Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So this is...
I was going to do that, but I didn't want to, so I'm glad you did.
Make it if they want to.
It's Game of Thrones is a great series, and I look at it as being more of a series now that the novel is written, because the stories in this is endless, and it takes on and on and on to a point, of course, you just have to end it. But if Game of Thrones was done successful, this can be done too.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I absolutely thank you. Thank you for your time. So I have been talking about The Family Business. People can download BET Plus. But if you can, just tell my listeners where they can go in order to pick up a copy of your book. And at the end of my shows, I like to ask my guests to leave my listeners with one final thought. So if you both could leave my listeners with one final thought, and then one of you tell how you can, where you can go in order to purchase a copy of this book.
Well, I would say, as a quick final thought to everybody, because I tell this to my own sons, you can do anything you choose to do. And sometimes in this world that we live in, especially with what's going on now in the world with this pandemic and a lot of this racial tension, we can create the realities that we want. Mm-hmm. We can do so by, of course, being positive, surrounding yourself with positive people. But our thoughts are very, very dynamic and powerful. Mm-hmm. Write down your goals. Mm-hmm. Write them down. Create a vision board if need be, because you have to visualize the
Are right we there? Okay.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So just write down your goals, whether it be short, quick, or long. I always tell people you can write down long goals, but create some short ones, because when you obtain your short ones, it helps you to reach and obtain your long creative goals.
Yes. And to really just grow from that, it's the same thing, believe in yourself. Take away doubt. You know, that's our biggest thing as well, just how we was raised. Don't look at everything as a bad thing. Like I said, it's a shortcoming. Everything happens for a reason. That, you know, look into it, have a positive perspective, and move forward. You know, get out the negative space and just be positive. And honestly, that's how Antoine and I both live our lives, you know, with our own wives the same way, with our children. Just be positive, you know. So that's our message. That's Ask Brothers' message to the world.
And they can buy the book on Amazon. They can just type in Pharaoh, Power Behind the Sun. is also in, it's a Kindle version, and it was also a paperback. Be following us on our Instagram, which is Ash Brother Twins, and also on Facebook, which is Ash Brothers. We will be dropping a website soon where they can buy it from the website, and they can buy it at a discounted rate. Also, for the holiday season coming up, I will be publishing a hardback copy version, and a hardback version will have some additional extra stuff that I hope people will enjoy.
Yes, and thank you, brother, for giving us the opportunity.
Oh, absolutely, man. Thank you both very kindly for being here. You know, the way I would like to end my show this week, of course, thanking Antoine and Spencer for being on. But, you know, yes, these two gentlemen, they're twins. You know, they live a unique life already. Compounded on top of that, they have the uniqueness of, you know, their job choice, which is working, you know, in the entertainment industry. We had a lot of conversation tonight about talking about, you know, the different oddities that we have had on set, being bumped up to stuff, or, you know, because of your look, you know, getting specific opportunities because your look was that specific. And I wanted you all to take that from our conversation this evening. But more importantly, I would like for you, my listeners, to take from this conversation hard work, dedication, work, studying is what you need to do in order to make some level of success of yourself, in my opinion. Yes, some of the opportunities that I received were because of the way I look. Some of the opportunities that I got, I'll say, were because of the way I look. But I was able to capitalize on that because my body of work is as strong as my look. And that's what I want to leave with my listeners tonight. Make your body of work as strong as the look you put out. You, if you are one of these people that spends all kind of money on clothes and this tanning lotion and this hair product or this makeup, whatever, because you need to look your best, you need to put just as much stock in growing your inner as you are making up your outer. I have said for I don't know how many years, if you pay attention to paying attention, the right people will pay attention to you. And people will always pay attention to a total package. There are so many people in my industry right now that look good, but you put a script in their hand and you will realize why it goes as far as the look. So in whatever walk of life you're in, I don't care if you are a janitor, I don't care if you are a billionaire mogul. Whatever you are in life, make your work as strong as your look. And I believe if you do that, you will see a level of success that you are not only in line for, you are not only deserving of, but you will start to see the success that other people told you you could not have. I thank you all very kindly for joining me this week. Look forward to next week's show. We'll start talking about that one next week. Again, I want to thank Antoine and I want to thank Spencer for coming on. You all have a great week. Love each other. Love yourselves. Be kind to each other. We are out. We'll be right back. Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.